morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Monday, December 20th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. There were more protests in Sudan on Sunday on the third anniversary of al-Bashir's ouster.
They are saying within the past 3 years, nothing has changed. Like, the living costs remain the same, the insecurity remains the same in major part of the country, and there is no much being done by the transitional government.
Concerns in Guinea over the renaming of the country's international airport. Liberian diaspora return home to participate in the country's bicentennial celebration. And Malawi's president assures his country's military of non-political interference.
All I expect from you is to stay true to your mandate, stay true to our nation's citizens, stay true to our nation's constitution, and stay true to our nation's flag.
And clashes between communities in Cameroon's far north region over water scarcity. Those stories plus Samson O'Malley's sports are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Protesters in Sudan took to the streets again yesterday, Sunday, to demand a civilian-led government on the third anniversary of the uprising that led to the overthrow of President Omar al-Bashir. Sunday's protest followed Saturday's call by Prime Minister Abdallah Hamdok for him to form a third transitional government, saying the stability and unity of Sudan was at stake. Journalist Michael Atit in the Sudanese capital Khartoum says the protesters made their way to the presidential palace despite heavy security deployment.
Yesterday, the 19th of December, marking the 3 years of the beginning of the December revolution in Sudan that led to the ouster of former President Omar al-Bashir in April 2019. The protesters gathered from the three major towns of Khartoum, that is Khartoum North and Omdurman, and they tried to approach the presidential palace. In the first place, they were faced with a heavy tear gas, but they resisted and they insisted moving forward towards the presidential palace. And it seems there were some orders from the security organs or military in the country. After some time, the security and the police tried, you know, and retreated from the various checkpoints that they were stationed at. And at the end of the day, at around 4 to 5 p.m. Sudanese time, the protesters arrived at the presidential palace. They expected maybe to begin a sit-in in front of that palace.
So, Michael, you mentioned the 19th of December anniversary. This was the protest that led to the downfall of former President Bashir. Now, what are these protesters demanding now?
They are saying within the past 3 years, nothing has changed. Like, the living costs remain the same, the insecurity remains the same in major part of the country, and there is no much being done by the transitional government. That is one. Number two, they are demanding the military leaders to form a civilian transitional government to complete the rest of the transitional period. They want the military and civilian partnership to come to an end so that civilians are the one leading the country. They don't want any involvement of the military. They are also protesting against the recent political agreement that was signed on November 21st by al-Burhan and Hamdok, which reinstated Hamdok back to his position.
Michael, I wonder if you saw, there was an article in which the Prime Minister Hamdok was sounding a warning, saying that the stability of Sudan and the unity of Sudan is in danger. He also called for a political agreement. What is the Prime Minister referring to here?
Prime Minister, basically, he has been repeating this over and over again. I remember during the signing ceremony of this political declaration on November 21st, he mentioned during his speech and said he accepted to sign this political agreement because he wanted to stop the bloodshed of the young Sudanese. And he also wanted to make sure the country does not go into, you know, violence and to tribal and ethnic dimension.
Michael, thank you so much again for bringing us up to date about Sudan. Thank you very much.
You're welcome, James. Thank you. You're always welcome.
That was journalist Michael Atit speaking with us from the Sudanese capital, Khartoum. The commander of Malawi's army has criticized what he says is interference from government officials into the affairs of the military. General Vincent Nundwe says this could incite anarchy and should stop. Lamek Masina reports from Blantyre.
General Nundwe expressed the concern Saturday during a televised parade of newly commissioned military officers at the Malawi Armed Forces College in Salima District. At the gathering, which President Lazarus Chakwera also attended as Commander-in-Chief of the Defense Force, Nundwe said the military has been receiving instructions from government authorities to promote some officers. He says letters have been coming from the office of the President and Cabinet, addressed to the army commander, instructing him to promote some officers. We can't accept that. We issue promotions to military officers ourselves. Nundwe said such tendencies violate military etiquette and can cause conflict. He says we don't want conflicts in Malawi. If you have time, use that energy for something productive, not bringing conflict into the military. No, I have already given an example about Ethiopia, where military officers are fighting one another. I can't accept that. Nundwe also voiced concern about some military officers lobbying for higher positions through politicians. He says if you are a military officer, there is a command element here which recommends you to the Defense Council if you are worth promotion. You do not go and lobby from a politician as if you are working with politicians. So to you politicians, if such officers approach you, please desist from engaging them. In March of last year, Nundwe himself became a victim of political interference when then President Peter Mutharika fired him as army commander for allegedly allowing the military to protect demonstrators protesting the results of the 2019 presidential elections. Current President Chakwera reinstated Nundwe in September 2020 after Chakwera defeated Mutharika during the rerun of presidential elections 3 months earlier, saying the aim was to restore justice to the operations of the Malawi Defense Force. But Nundwe said Saturday, the Malawi Defense Force is an institution governed by the law and is supposed to serve all people in the country without interference. In his remarks, Chakwera said his administration will ensure that the soldiers receive the necessary support to enable them to deliver on their mandate without any political influence.
All I expect from you is to stay true to your mandate, stay true to our nation's citizens, stay true to our nation's constitution, and stay true to our nation's flag. I know that doing so involves giving up so much more than we can ever repay.
Chakwera told military officers that they should know that they are the pride of Malawi. Lamek Masina for VOA News, Blantyre, Malawi.
Celebrations have begun for the 200th anniversary of Liberia's founding. According to history, Liberia was founded in 1822 by the American Colonization Society, which wanted to find a home in Africa for freed black slaves. Liberia's flag and constitution are patterned after those of the United States. Its capital, Monrovia, is named after U.S. President James Monroe. The official launch of the bicentennial will take place in February 2022, and the theme is Liberia, Land of Return, commemorating 200 years of freedom and pan-African leadership. Over the weekend, a group of diaspora Liberians from the United States arrived in Liberia. On the line from Monrovia is Clarice Fuokula, CEO of the Liberia Year of the Diaspora Return 2021-2022, and Nequita Ricks of Liberian descent, who ran and won as state representative for the state of Colorado District 40 during the 2020 U.S. election. Good morning, ladies, and welcome to Daybreak Africa.
Good morning, Mr. Bussi. Thanks for having us on VOA.
Thank you. Tell me, ladies, first of all, what was it like for you upon arrival in Monrovia? Let me start with Dr. Kula first.
My arrival was a little simpler than Representative Riggs. So I came through very quietly. But one thing that I noticed and that I really liked was the attention that the Liberian Airport was paying toward the COVID-19. So they made sure that all of us were tested before we left the airport. It was done calmly. We maneuvered through the line very, quite quickly. You know, it wasn't as long as it normally is. And I saw that they were paying great detail to that, so I was very impressed.
Because I've heard reports from many visitors in and out of Liberia about COVID-19 protocols at the airport. What was it like for you?
The COVID-19 protocols were right on. I actually was welcomed by a VIP protocol team by the government of Liberia and then whisked away from the airplane to the VIP lounge where I was greeted by a great cultural performance. The chiefs of the county greeted me. Queen Julie Andy also greeted me with her dancers. And it was a very memorable, festive occasion. I felt so warmly welcomed and embraced by the Liberian people.
What role is the diaspora playing during this bicentennial? Let me go to Dr. Kula.
Okay, so our role here is, I think it's very special because this December, we're doing the Year of the Diaspora, which is a part of the bicentennial. So this December, we are bringing diasporans home to Liberia to give back, so to speak, spend our monies here, boost the economy a little bit, you know, get things going, talk about the investments that we can do here, talking about what Liberia has to offer to us as diasporan Liberians, as diasporans Africans, just diasporans, period. So our role here is really to just be a vessel through which other people can come to Liberia.
You all traveled to Liberia with some notables in the African-American community. One person I read about, in fact, I saw on the social media a program that was held, I think, was it a Providence Island? And the president there was John Amos, the actor in two movies that have to do with Africa, particularly Coming to America and Roots. What was it like, first of all, Nikwita, the program at Providence Island?
The program at Providence Island was very, very special. We begin the morning with a prayer at Providence Baptist Church, which is the oldest Baptist church on the continent of Africa. And it talked about how Lot Carey and others were there at the signing of the independence of Liberia. And it took us back in, you know, through history, about 200 years ago, when these free settlers came finding that land of liberty. And from there, we went to Providence Island, where we were greeted by different cultural performances from the southeast to the northeast by Julie Andy, cultural ambassador. And then there was also a reenactment of when the settlers came and the signing of the purchase of the land of Providence Island to embrace and to integrate the natives and the settlers coming together. So it was a very beautiful, really moving celebration. And I think everybody that was there were very blessed.
Dr. Kula, when you and I spoke briefly over the weekend, I think I brought up the issue of the indigenous Liberians before the arrival of the free slaves. How are their voices being represented? Or are their voices also being represented?
Oh, yes, beautifully. So like Representative Rich mentioned, on Providence Island this morning, we did a reenactment of the settlers that came. We started, of course, with our local tribes because they were already here. We started by saying, contrary to what many may think, there were actually people living here, you know, before the settlers came. And it was wonderful. The actors that played in here, acting as the locals, I mean, they were amazing.
All right. Thank you very much. Keep me posted, please.
We will. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Clarice Ford Kula, CEO of the Liberian Year of the Diaspora Return 2021-2022, and Nikwita Ricks of Liberian descent, who ran and won as state representative for the state of Colorado District 40 during the 2020 U.S. election. They were speaking with us from the Liberian capital, Monrovia. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Monday, December 20th. In Guinea, a decision last week by military leader Colonel Mamadi Doumbouya to rename the country's Weseya International Airport to Sékou Touré International Airport has generated some controversy between civilian Prime Minister Mohamed Bivogi and Colonel Doumbouya. This after the Prime Minister expressed displeasure over the decision. The late Ahmed Sékou Touré was the first president of Guinea who ruled from 1958 until his death in 1984. Fayyami Limuno, the leader of the Liberal Bloc Party, says while he is not against the renaming of the airport, he understands the feelings of those who disapprove because most Guinean presidents have been controversial.
The Prime Minister, in reaction to the renaming of the airport, after the name of the first president, Ahmed Sékou Touré, he has reacted saying that first he wasn't consulted, he was surprised and he was disappointed. The naming of the airport after the name of the first president has created a lot of controversy here in Guinea because all Guinean leaders are very controversial, and the most controversial is the first president. So there are many people who consider that justice has to be made for the people who were victims of that regime first before doing anything of that.
When you say all Guinean presidents are controversial, Sékou Touré was the founding president. What controversy about Sékou Touré that people will be against renaming the international airport after him?
You know, for many people whose parents were killed during Sékou Touré time, you have hear about the so-called Camp Waru. It wasn't the only military camp where many people have lost their life during the PDG regime. So it is mainly what make the figure of Sékou Touré, the first president of Guinea, one of the most controversial figures. But when I say that all the Guinean leaders are very controversial, it's because when you look back, you will see that the power in Guinea is too bloody. The power in Guinea from the independence to now, you have all the time many people killed and no justice was made. That makes all the presidents of Guinea very controversial. But the naming of the airport after the name of Sékou Touré, I think it is the history. He was the first president of this country, and he was the president of Guinea at the most difficult time.
What was the airport called before Colonel Mamadi Doumbouya decided to rename it?
The name of the airport was Weseya International Airport. But now it is Ahmed Sékou Touré International Airport of Conakry.
Fayyami Limuno is the leader of the Liberal Bloc Party of Guinea. He was speaking with us from the capital, Conakry. Clashes between communities in Cameroon's far north region over water scarcity have caused more than 30,000 people to flee and led to at least 22 people being killed, according to the United Nations Refugee Agency, UNHCR. Spokesperson Helen Ngor talked with Ricky Stryak about the ongoing resource scarcity and violence in the area.
The situation now in Kuseri and in the surrounding some tension. This is, of course, because of the clashes between herders and fishermen and farmers, which has left 44 people dead, another 111 persons wounded, and 112 villages raised. Now, the dispute is over the availability of resources, specifically water, as natural water sources in general in the area have disappeared over the past few years. A prime example of that would be the Lake Chad, which has shrunk by at least 95% of what it was in the 1960s. And the Logon River, as you know, is one of its tributaries. So basically, this is what has led to the clashes.
Have there been reactions from the authorities to try and quell these clashes?
So this is something that is ongoing. I mean, just before the recent clashes, quite literally on the eve of those clashes, there was an effort to, you know, encourage reconciliation and peaceful cohabitation, which was organized by UNHCR in support of administrative authorities. This brought together traditional authorities, regional leaders, representatives of all the communities involved. So obviously that did not work. So without urgent action to address the root causes of this crisis, the situation could further escalate. And for now, there are some long-term projects, which, of course, are long-term, but for now, there's really nothing happening at the moment, you know, to provide immediate relief, you know, for the root causes of the situation.
And what kind of pressure is this putting on communities in Chad who are receiving these, the people who've had to flee?
It will be quite a lot of pressure that has been put on those communities, especially when you're considering that it's tens of thousands of people who crossed over, you know, fleeing the violence. And basically, you know, it's not only in Chad that you have these displaced people. It's not only in Chad that, you know, people fled to. Even in Cameroon, there are at least 15,000 displaced persons. They are scattered in many localities around the area, some as far away as the headquarters of the Far North region in Maroua, which is at least 6 hours away from Kusiri by car. And many of them who have fled are women and children. For now, their immediate needs, which I think would mirror exactly the same situation over in Chad, would be an urgent need for food, water, shelter, non-food items like blankets and soap. So that would be the basic immediate needs. Obviously, if it's a prolonged situation, then you would have to look at long-term assistance or perhaps long-term interventions that are designed, you know, to not to just help people be self-sufficient. And in that case, you would need healthcare, you would need, livelihoods and several other things, not only for those who have been forced to flee, the refugees, but also for the host communities.
That was Helen Ngor, a spokesperson for the United Nations Refugee Agency in Cameroon. She was speaking to Ricky Stryak from Yaoundé. It is time now for Daybreak Africa Sports, and here is Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. A very good Monday morning to you, Samson.
Good Monday morning to you too, James. We begin the sports with the pairings for the fourth round of African qualifiers ahead of the FIFA Under 20 Women's World Cup Costa Rica 2022, scheduled for next year's January and February. Morocco, Ethiopia, Tanzania, Ghana, Nigeria, Cameroon, Uganda, and Senegal have all clinched their places in the fourth round. In the first leg scheduled for the 21st to the 23rd of January 2022, Tanzania will face Ethiopia, Uganda will face Ghana, Senegal will visit Morocco, while Cameroon will face Nigeria. The return leg in February shows Ethiopia will welcome Tanzania, Ghana will be at home to Uganda, while Morocco will travel to Senegal, while Nigeria will host Cameroon. The 2021 edition of the African Schools Individual Chess Championship came to a close on Sunday. The championship attracted 166 players from Kenya, Botswana, Ghana, Malawi, Nigeria, South Africa, Tanzania, Uganda, and Zimbabwe, with Kenya and South Africa fielding the largest number of players at 67 and 41 respectively. Elizabeth Kasidi won gold in the under-11 category for host Kenya.
I am really proud of myself because I got gold. I've won 9 out of 9. I think in our category I'm the only one who got 9 out of 9, and I'm very happy. And I want to thank God for this opportunity that he gave me.
And now to swimming. South African swimmer Chad Lecloze was close to securing his fifth gold medal in the 100 meters butterfly on day 3 of the World Short Course Championships in Abu Dhabi. Swimming in lane 5, Lecloze touched the wall in a time of 49.04 seconds to settle for second at the iconic Etihad Arena on Saturday. It's Lecloze's second medal of the 15th edition of the FINA World Swimming Championships after he won bronze in the 200 meters butterfly. Lecloze was searching for his fifth straight gold in the 100 meters butterfly after finishing off his best in the heat and finishing fourth in 50.47 seconds to the semifinal 11th fastest overall. In basketball news, Rwanda national basketball team head coach Sheikh Sarr
has signed a new two-year contract extension. The Senegalese tactician has been at the helm of both the men's and women's national teams since April this year. In September, he led the men's national team to the quarterfinals of the AfroBasket, a competition that attracted 16 African countries. Among the responsibilities given to him in his new tenure in Rwanda, he will be preparing the men's national team for the upcoming FIBA World Cup 2023 qualifiers, which get underway in February next year. And that's it on Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a good day. And that's it for this Monday, December 20th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for starting your week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Reiki Stryak, as well as sports editor Samson Omale, along with all our engineers, I'm James.